This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
If you're listening to this, congrats! You made it to the end of a week with a news cycle that was frankly chaotic. But now it's time to sit back and catch up on the biggest stories of the past couple days. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is WBEZ's Weekly News Recap. Let's get right into it, because there are a lot of big stories to discuss. Election day is less than a week away.
With Johnson and Vallis essentially tied, the fight is over the 10%. Still undecided.
And a former presidential candidate threw his weight behind a mayoral hopeful.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders endorsing Brandon Johnson in front of thousands at UIC.
With us to break down the news is a panel of top Chicago journalists. Kim Bellware, national and breaking news reporter for The Washington Post. John Fountain, journalism professor at Roosevelt University. And Heather Sharon, Chicago politics reporter for WTTW. All right, folks. Stunning news yesterday. Of course, I'm talking about the indictment of former President Donald Trump. Were you all surprised?
I was, because I think there had been a lot of coverage about how the grand jury was going on a break and they heard from another witness after everybody, you know, had sort of been braced for it. So at least for me, it sort of came out of the blue. And I think there was a little bit of reporting from The New York Times and The Washington Post that even former President Trump had begun telling people he didn't think he was imminently going to be indicted. Mm-hmm. And I bet he was surprised, too.
Yeah, there was a lot of discussion about how this grand jury was going to take a break, you know, through April, and wasn't expected to have a lot of activity. It's also one of his nicknames, Teflon Don. You know, there's a lot of people who thought that charges were, you know, really never going to come for him.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious of your thoughts, John, and whether maybe you're worried that we'll see a repeat of January 6th.
I certainly hope we don't see a repeat of January 6th. You know, I was a bit surprised about the indictment. We all knew it was kind of in the loop. But, you know, I think that so many Americans, I'm one of them who is feeling kind of Trump exhaustion. And, you know, we've seen and heard talk of charges going to be filed against former President Trump. And it's been a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And so now that it has finally happened, I'm still shocked.
Yeah. How do you think it will impact the 2024 presidential election?
You know, I'm reminded. You know, I think that there is so much about this case that remains to be seen. Number one, the indictment. When it is unsealed, what will it say? What will it reveal? But I'm also reminded, I think, in 2016 when Donald Trump said, look, I could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any support.
I remember that.
So I think his supporters are, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered. They're going to continue to support him.
All the way.
So, you know, we'll see.
All right, let's turn now to the most pressing election for us here in Chicago. We're just 4 days away from the runoff for mayor and for several aldermanic races. There's a recent poll from Northwestern University showing that the candidates basically are neck and neck, with each one having 44% of the overall vote. The poll shows that 12% are still undecided. So, Kim, does it surprise you that there are still so many undecided voters at this point in the race?
You know, it doesn't. In just anecdotally, in talking to people throughout the runoff campaign all over the city, there have been a lot of people, especially those in neighborhoods that swung the heaviest for Congressman Chuy Garcia and for Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who said they weren't sure if they were going to vote or they didn't know. Or if they did know, there were a lot of people in their circle who were feeling, you know, still kind of on the fence.
Yeah. Well, despite these leanings, NBC reports that about half of Spanish-speaking voters haven't been contacted by either candidate. Mm. Heather, your take on the lack of outreach?
Well, it's sort of this really negative feedback loop, right? Because some of the wards with the lowest turnout in the first round of voting were primarily Latino wards. So, for example, you saw a turnout somewhere in the 20s where citywide it was almost 36% in wards like the 22nd ward. And that means that campaigns which have a limited amount of money and a limited amount of time have to prioritize where the most voters are and where they can get sort of the most bang for their buck. Mm-hmm. And of course, that it's more expensive to translate campaign materials into Spanish. You have to make sure that you have people going door to door who speak Spanish and who are from that community, can speak in a culturally relevant way. It is harder. So then it becomes this sort of feedback loop where nobody asked me to vote for them, so I didn't vote for them, and voter turnout was really low. And, you know, I think that that is just another indication of the sort of the systemic inequities that exist in Chicago. I wish I had an answer for it. I don't.
What do you think, John?
I think that clearly one of the candidates is going to have to make inroads, and they've got to do it really quickly with the election looming. And I think, you know, someone said to me the other day, they said Lori Lightfoot, who isn't in the race, and Brandon Johnson are no Harold Washington, and neither is Paul Vallis. And what I think they meant by that is Harold Washington galvanized Chicago voters. And if you look at turnout on February 28th, and it was almost 4 out of 10 people turned out to vote. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of voter apathy. And I think part of voter apathy has to do with folks feeling like they don't matter, mm-hmm. or their votes don't matter. And I think that has got to change, not just in this election, but in the future as well.
Well, on that same topic of voter turnout, John, WBEZ came out with a data piece about how that could be the deciding factor this election. So I wonder how well you think Vallis and Johnson would be able to capture support among the voters who preferred Lightfoot or Chuy Garcia or Willie Wilson.
That's the million-dollar question. And if they're listening, they probably want the answer. I don't know. I don't know how you do that, except particularly at this late stage in the game. How you reach folks, how you get them excited. I think part of what has happened in other areas in the country, and certainly what happened with Washington, and it's sort of echoed in this idea of souls to the polls, is getting people engaged and understanding that their vote matters, and getting them to buy back into the idea that particularly, specifically in Chicago, that this who sits in the mayoral seat in the city of Chicago indeed matters in Lawndale and in Austin and mm-hmm. West Garfield and East Garfield and Pilsen. And so I think that's a question that needs to be further studied, and maybe greater minds than mine.
Well, Kim, Johnson and Vallis, they're both running as Democrats, yet their viewpoints, they couldn't be more on either end of the spectrum. So I wonder what you make of this level of diversity of thought within such a Democratic city like Chicago. I mean, does it challenge an assumption of what Democrats stand for?
I think it definitely shows, you know, the nuances within a heavily Democratic electorate in the city.
And should that stance be redefined, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because I'm thinking even in terms of public safety, that's been such a big issue of the race. That's been the central issue. And when you look at attitudes on things like public safety and police reform, even 3 years ago, that was so much stronger than it is now. So you see, you know, within the electorate, there is a lot of flexibility on kind of, you know, how big is the, you know, hardcore progressive base versus, you know, the more moderate Democratic voter, you know, makeup in the city. And, you know, there's also still about a quarter of people in the city that vote Republican. But, you know, I think it certainly makes the decision, I think, tough for moderates who don't know, you know, kind of which candidate really speaks to those, because, you know, in several conversations with voters, you know, they kind of zigzag between issues that both candidates, mm-hmm. You know, have a lot of, you know, there's a big disparity between them. You know, they like some of the proposals about reinvesting in communities, but, you know, they don't, you know, they maybe want a tougher on crime approach. And so that makes it tough, you know, which one they really have to make some
pick?
Hard choices.
Yeah. This week, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin endorsed Vallis, And U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders stopped by Chicago just last night to rally for Johnson. Anybody think these endorsements are going to help these candidates?
Well, you know, the rule of
thumb. John's laughing. Well, I'll come to you next. You first, Heather.
The rule of thumb is that endorsements matter if they come with money or boots on the ground. And I haven't seen any evidence that Dick Durbin's endorsement has come with either one of those. Now, the flip side to that is clearly Paul Vallis is relying on people like Dick Durbin to point to when Brandon Johnson says, my opponent is actually a Republican at heart. And that so is not worthless. The endorsement of somebody like Bernie Sanders, it, you know, could be important if those 4,000 people who turned out last night at the what used to be the UIC Pavilion, because I'm 1,000 years old, that's how I will remember it, but is now the Credit One Arena, you know, do they vote? Are they energized? Do they tell their friends, gosh, I saw Bernie Sanders and he makes me think a different Chicago is possible. Please go vote. So that's the battle of endorsements. But when you're, you know, looking at a voter turnout of, you know, maybe above 40%, it really is going to decide, you know, who votes, who's motivated to vote, and how that all shakes out. I don't doubt that either candidate would rather have, you know, an extra $200,000 at this point than somebody else putting out a press release.
What do you think about these endorsements, John?
I think that, you know, it's good to get endorsements, but, you know, I'm on the same page. Does it come with money? Does it come with boots on the ground? And particularly with the election just days away. I got to say, though, this Bernie Sanders thing is, you know, I was talking to some of my students about it. I said, why do you guys like Bernie Sanders? You know, he's old enough to be at least your grandfather. And they said, well, we believe in his message. And he we believe that he is about bringing in a new guard, bringing in change. I said, but he's Bernie Sanders. He's been in forever. And they still, you know, I think, you know, that said, every vote counts.
Yeah.
So I think at this stage in the game, it's all hands on deck.
So maybe it's no surprise, right? But the people and organizations that are contributing to these candidates' campaigns, they reflect the priorities that each of the candidates is running on, particularly when we talk about school choice and education. Fill us in, Heather.
So Paul Vallis was really one of the leading architects of the movement in the late 1990s and the early 2000s to transform public school districts into charter school districts. Now, charter schools are public schools, but they're privately run. And Paul Vallis was really a champion of them on a national level, not just in Chicago, but in New Orleans and Bridgeport, Connecticut and Philadelphia. And while he has said that he thinks Chicago has enough charters, his platform is really the only one that embraces that movement, which has really fallen out of favor with mainstream Democrats. And that is why he has the endorsement of people like Arne Duncan, who is also very pro-charter schools. And of course, he got a significant amount of money from an independent political group that is funded by Betsy DeVos, who was, of course, former President Trump's education secretary.
Yeah.
So there is more alike between the education policies between President Obama and President Trump than one might think. And Brandon Johnson is really part of a movement that emerged not just in opposition to that, but in opposition to a whole host of similar political beliefs. So that is really why this has become sort of a battle over what proponents of charter schools will call school choice and what people like the Chicago Teachers Union will call the defunding of public school districts.
I'm going to stick with you for another moment, Heather, and turn to some interesting news out of City Council. The next 50 alder people will be more independent from the mayor. What happened?
Maybe. I mean, that's, you know, call me skeptical, but, you know, for decades, the city council has functioned as a rubber stamp of whoever happened to be sitting in the mayor's chair. So that was true under former mayor Richard M. Daley. It was true under former mayor Rahm Emanuel. But that started to break down under Mayor Lori Lightfoot because she was spectacularly ill-equipped to not only make new friends, but she did a bad job keeping the friends that she had when she took office, which is why you saw a number of her handpicked committee chairs endorse somebody other than her for re-election. So that meant that her allies, after she lost, looked around and said, well, we're in danger, right? Because somebody else is going to come in and somebody else might want to put their allies in my spot. I really like this spot because people call me chairman or they call me chairwoman, and I get on average an extra $300,000 to spend on my staff. And because the rules are a little bit different, I get to hire whoever I want. So I can hire my cousin and my best friend and that sort of thing. So that was part of the impetus to sort of get together and say, let's make this decision for ourselves. Now, the city council has always had this power. They just never felt, you know, free to exercise this power. So I think it is at least at this point still an open question about what happens after we know who the next mayor of Chicago is. Does he come in and say, oh, that's real nice that you made those plans. Here's what I want. And do they fall in line
again? I mean, both Vallis and Johnson have said that they favor an independent city council. Right.
So a lot of mayors want independence to a degree, and that often stops at the water's edge because you can be independent as long as I don't care what you're doing. But if I care, then I would like you to fall in line.
Right.
And just like we have a strong tradition in Chicago of reelecting mayors for, you know, 20 odd years at a time, the city council has no institutional memory or muscles to be independent. And they have traditionally not been a legislative body. They have been 50 tiny cities governed by, you know, a tiny mayor sort of exercising total control over that area. It's very different to go from being sort of the alderperson of a neighborhood like South Shore and only focused on South Shore, but then being asked to sort of say, well, what sort of abortion care policy should the city of Chicago have? How much taxpayer dollars should we spend to ensure that people coming from Indiana, where the right to an abortion has been severely curtailed, if not banned, what amount of my constituents' taxpayer dollars should we spend? Those are two very different skill sets, and one most city council members are comfortable with. One will be, we are entering into the great unknown.
My goodness. So, Kim, does this vote mirror what we're seeing on the national scale? I'm thinking specifically of Republican lawmakers who sought more independence from leadership. And this is when they're choosing like the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. Republican lawmakers won major concessions from Speaker Kevin McCarthy that gave them more power. So I'm talking things like lowering the number of lawmakers required to call a no-confidence vote and getting more time to review legislation before voting on it.
Well, I think you're seeing across the country definitely, especially where Republicans might have made gains in, you know, at the local level, they're going to try and, you know, reform the rules a little bit or take back some of that power so they can act with, you know, more independence. The makeup of the city council, I think Heather probably would be more dialed into this, but, you know, it seems like it has certainly retained a lot of its more progressive members. It's, it looks like it's getting younger, too, a little bit. So, you know, kind of tossing back to what's happening here, you know, how much will that independence remain? But, you know, the other thing is that the city council just fundamentally doesn't seem to have the same makeup that it once did, where you had a really strong mayor who had a lot of, you know, patronage opportunities. Now it does seem like there's something to be gained if city council members can, you know, flex a little more of their independent muscle.
Weakening the next mayor's powers. John, final thoughts from you before we take a pause. I mean, have we seen a movement like this before in Chicago?
I can't remember. And I'm probably older than anybody in here. I was born in 1960. And
yep. I confirm.
I get the cake.
But you win.
But I don't think I have. You know, I am used to the old city, blustery, windy city of Chicago that, you know, where there is lots of, you know, political bluster, and that the person who sits in the seat in the mayor's office is the one who rules. They're the boss.
Yeah.
And so this idea of an independent city council, I'm like, where's that? I'd like to see it. And I think that having a more independent city council, I think, again, speaks to something I said earlier about getting folks who live beyond, you know, City Hall, beyond the Gold Coast, who live in what I call the Cold Coast, to buy in and to feel like they have a stake in the city and that the city cares about them and their needs and issues as well.
Well, and to, you know, also go off of John and Heather's points, just a reminder, you know, Chicago has so many more aldermen, you know, proportionally than a lot of other major cities, you know, so everybody has their own little fiefdom. You don't quite have, I mean, that's why it's so unique to us in some ways.
I have more city council questions for you folks. So at this point, 14 seats are open, and I want to discuss campaigning. We've seen groups across the political spectrum pouring thousands of dollars into these races. Heather, have they been successful winning seats for their candidates?
So the Get Stuff Done PAC was really created by former aides to Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who were concerned that the city council was going to move to the left significantly. And in the first round of voting, they were not successful. They targeted Alderman Byron Sigchul Lopez in the 25th ward, and they spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to hurt his campaign and to boost the campaign of his opponent, Aida Flores. Sigchul Lopez won relatively handily, which means that they now have only one sort of main target in these runoff, which is Angela Clay in the 46th ward to represent Uptown. So she is the last remaining city council challenger who has been endorsed by the Chicago chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. And so she would be the seventh member to be backed by DSA to be on the city council. And she faces Kim Walls, who is a lot of support from the Democratic establishment. So that race has really been the focus of the Get Stuff Done PAC. But as you said, there's lots of other money, too, especially mm-hmm. from United Working Families, which is not only endorsing Brandon Johnson, but endorsed a slate of 17 candidates and had a relatively high success rate, including with victories outright by Jesse Fuentes in the 26th ward and Julio Ramirez in the 12th ward. So they're hoping to expand not just the Progressive Caucus, but really sort of the very solid sort of Brandon Johnson endorsing Progressive Caucus.
Yeah.
And that could shift significantly regardless of sort of the efforts by the business community.
Yeah.
And I should add, the realtors have also spent a significant amount of money as well.
I mean, John, as we heard, the Get Stuff Done PAC, it spent over $1 million in these races. Are you surprised? Do we typically see this type of money poured into aldermanic races?
I don't know if I can't speak to that, whether this is typical or atypical, but I know that it is clear that, you know, that the stakes are high in this election and they're doing it. And so it is, I think it's something for us to note.
With new folks, Heather, you know, particularly progressive council members joining, how progressive could the next city council be?
Significantly progressive, yeah. Which is why I'm not sure I agree with our esteemed commenter's comment that the reorganization stands to benefit Mayor Paul Vallis and not a Mayor Brandon Johnson, because four of the new committees are set to be held by members of DSA, which would be just a really significant shift in terms of sort of the ability of those alder people to get hearings, to call votes, to sort of push those things forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that the math for progressives and getting things like, you know, the Bring Chicago Home ordinance, which would increase real estate transfer taxes to fund services for unhoused Chicagoans. I think the treatment not trauma proposal, I think all of those become easier to at least put in the city hall spotlight, if not actually pass in this next term. So that is essentially what the business community is sort of pushing back against, because they see those proposals as A, very expensive, and B, not friendly to business. And we can sort of, if we had 1,000 hours, we could talk about the truth of those. But that's sort of what they're pushing back. But, you know, again, I think that the electorate as a whole is receptive to those. And I think that those issues have really buoyed Brandon Johnson's campaign.
Kim, there will be a new mayor and a number of new aldermen joining. So what do you think needs to happen for them to work together successfully?
Well, I think the new mayor is definitely going to have to strike a different tone and a different posture than Mayor Lori Lightfoot did. You know, she had this reputation as being someone who was difficult to work with, you know, who was just very combative. And I think whoever the next mayor is might want to make a, you know, extend a little bit of an olive branch, show that they're there mm-hmm. to, you know, be cooperative, that they value independence of the city council, whether or not, you know, how deeply they believe that. And definitely a tone shift is going to be something to kind of erase some of the, you know, some of the bad juju from the past 4 years when it, you know, we saw it was a very explosive city hall. You know, there's only, Heather, is there only one more?
One more
yeah. Under, you know, Mayor Lightfoot. Yesterday's was, you know, lots of fireworks. And, you know, interestingly, Mayor Lightfoot, she seems very, very done with it all. She kind of put out a statement saying, you know, someone told me yesterday, they said it sounded like the lead of a both sides story where,
well, it literally ended with time will tell.
Oh, wow.
and you know, this is really sort of a point of personal sort of, you know, frustration, but you know, it has been 58 days since Lori Lightfoot has held a news conference.
Not that I'm counting
in her official role as mayor of Chicago. And you know, I think that these debates can often sort of seem very self-serving, and I'm not going to deny that I would like the you know, chance to ask her questions, but the fact of the matter is that she is going to be mayor of Chicago for the next 45 days. And I think it's a crucial part of democracy that members of the news media are allowed to question and, you know, confront our elected leaders. And we just simply have not had that opportunity for a significant period of time. And I think that we are going to have to press whoever the next mayor is to make sure that that access is not curtailed as the way that it has been under Lori Lightfoot.
I want to quickly dig into a race here. The 11th Ward, Chicago's first Asian majority ward, and incumbent Alderwoman Nicole Lee, as well as longtime CPD officer Anthony Saravino, they're going to face off next week. So, Heather, I mean, this race is interesting because for Chicago's first Asian majority ward, it could or could not see an Asian alderman representing it.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, every 10 years after the census, the ward boundaries have to get redrawn. And part of the real push was to create an 11th ward that unified Chinatown, which is one of the few Chinatowns in the United States that's growing, because for many, many years, Asian Americans in Chicago felt like their political power was diluted because their votes were essentially split between the 11th ward and the 25th ward. So now they have an opportunity to sort of, you know, join together and express that sort of political power. And that pits, as you said, Alderman Lee, who was appointed by Lori Lightfoot, against Officer Anthony Saravino. And it's a really fascinating race because Lee did not endorse Lori Lightfoot, even though Lori Lightfoot appointed her to the city council, which I think was an early indication that Lori Lightfoot was in deep trouble. And she has endorsed Paul Vallis, who has endorsed him. Now, Vallis won the 11th ward pretty handily because there are a lot of concerns about crime and public safety in the 11th ward and among the Asian community, which is why I think that that Officer Saravino has had such, you know, success in his race. The question is, you know, do there was another Asian candidate in the race, to do, you know, those supporters unite behind Nicole Lee? And, you know, Nicole Lee is not just, you know, sort of the Asian candidate. Her family has deep ties to the Daily Machine, which really ran the 11th ward as the fiefdom of all fiefdoms. And she has been campaigning not just with members of the Daily family, but the member of the Daily family, former Mayor Richard M. Daley, who has not been seen in public very often. But so for him to make sort of a public sort of endorsement of Lee, I think shows you sort of, you know, the signaling of the Daily, what's left of the Daily Machine, saying, you know, she's one of us. She might look a little bit different, but she's one of us.
Mm. John and Kim, any aldermanic races that you all have your eyes on?
Well, I'm interested in the 36th, personal bias there, because that's where I live.
Is that where you live?
But, you know,
live in the pool noodle ward.
Yes,
congratulations.
I live in the pool noodle ward. You know, it's newly redrawn, very oddly shaped stretches, basically from, I guess, parts of West Town all the way up to, I don't even know how far it goes, but oddly shaped. And that is another one of those races where you have the get stuff done pack, you know, spending money against a challenger, Lori Torres Witt. She is she's a teacher, you know, has kind of campaigned with Johnson, going up against incumbent Gil Villegas, who has been getting a lot of support from the real estate community, the business community. And, you know, he doesn't have a big gap to close. You know, he won about 45% in the general. So but the signs are everywhere. Both candidates have been and about. They have been knocking on those doors.
Yeah, I can imagine. So. The mailers, all the things.
My mailbox is exploding.
I can imagine. John, anything keeping you?
No, I just, like most Chicagoans, waiting with bated breath.
We'll wait and see. I do want to switch gears to the ComEd bribery trial, which I know you've all been paying attention to. I'm going to do something a little different here first. John, can you give us sort of the big picture here? I mean, Illinois is known for political corruption. What do you think is at stake now with this trial?
Illinois is known for political corruption?
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard.
Shocking. I am shocked.
I can't believe it. what's at stake here, I think, is what's always been at stake, the integrity of the state, the integrity of the county. I think people's belief in the system and politicians and ultimately the belief in justice, which we're also seeing play out nationally. And so, you know, I've looked at some of the trial and some of the updates, part of the secret recordings of the utility exec Fidel Marquez, who wore a wire, and also a body camera to capture his interactions with the four defendants.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see to watch how this is going to play out, and ultimately, you know, it leads all the way to Mr. Madigan, and so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's get a little more granular here. We talked a lot about this during our recap last week, Heather, but just give us another quick overview of what this case is about.
So on trial are four former ComEd executives and lobbyists, and they are essentially charged with doing the bidding of former House Speaker Michael Madigan, who has also been criminally charged but in a separate indictment and is set to go on trial in April 2024. And what the trial has done so far, and you know, clearly we've only heard sort of like the very start of the prosecution's case, is that they are really describing how it worked when Michael Madigan, who ruled Springfield with, you know, an iron fist, said, I want X. And if you want me to do Y, you're going to need to get me X. And X, the prosecution alleged, was often jobs for his friends and associates and special treatment for his family. I laughed out loud when I heard the testimony about, you know, Madigan's daughter's house suffering a power outage and the ComEd CEO being notified and told to sort of get going ASAP on fixing it. Wouldn't we all like to be able to make that phone call, right? But I think that for a long time, just as a political reporter, the way Michael Madigan operated was shielded behind closed doors. You know, he did not operate in public. He operated on a need-to-know basis in the news media. He was clearly at the top of his does-not-need-to-know list. So this is giving us a glimpse into how state politics and state government really operated for many, many years. And of course, the defense is arguing, look, this is just politics. This is just lobbying. This is just horse trading. It's not illegal. It's just how the sausage gets made. And yeah, it might be kind of gross when you look at it up close, but it is not illegal. And that's ultimately what the jury is going to have to decide.
Well, before we take a pause, Heather, tell us what we could expect next.
Well, we're going to keep hearing from Fidel Marquez, the star witness who, you know, was confronted. We heard yesterday on a cold morning by FBI agents who agreed to cooperate even before consulting his own lawyer. I feel compelled to say don't do that. If the FBI shows up, it's always ask for a lawyer. And we're going to see him sort of having to defend sort of his participation in this scheme, because of course he cooperated to avoid a lengthy jail time and a trial in and of itself.
Let's get some good news into this recap, shall we? This is for sports fans. Major League Baseball is back. The Chicago Cubs debuted a front. Okay. How do you feel about it, John?
Cubs.
The Chicago Cubs debuted a fresh lineup of players during their opening day game yesterday. I mean, what do we know about our second stellar baseball team, the Chicago White Sox? And what about the dynamics of the team this season, Cubs?
I think we should all, as Chicagoans, take this moment, enjoy it, and revel it, because both teams are undefeated as of this moment, and it can really only go downhill from here, right? You know, the White Sox has sort of been in the middle of this sort of rebuilding, maybe it's going to happen, and it never quite seems to, you know, seems to happen. But Tim Anderson is one of the most fun players to watch. watch mm-hmm. in Major League Baseball. So, you know, it is a societal good that he is back on the baseball diamond. And, you know, but this season's going to be really weird because there are a bunch of changes that are going to go into effect with the pitch clock in an attempt to speed up the game, mm-hmm. which I personally don't understand, because you go to a baseball game to sort of slip the surly bonds of time and only exists in a liminal space where you're shoving, you know, hot dogs.
I want the time to speed up when I'm watching it on TV.
Well, there you go.
Not when I'm at the game.
Yeah. So, you know, hope springs eternal. I have yet to recover from the universe inversion World Series win of the Chicago Cubs in 2016. And, you know, perhaps if they win another World Series, the universe will turn back in on itself and right itself.
John, baseball fans have another reason to celebrate. The MLB Association reached a 5-year collective bargaining agreement with players. So this is also the first contract that includes minor league players. I mean, how big of a deal would you say this is?
Well, it seems to be a really big deal. I mean, it is the fact that you can, for baseball players, live your dream and have a livable wage. And
a huge deal.
That is excellent. And can I just say, there's only one team in town.
Oh, God. What team is that, John?
They're on the north side.
Do you want Sasha to get all sorts of angry chats?
Here come the emails. Listeners, please don't email me. I didn't say it. Please.
Do not at Sasha
It was
Simon.
Not me. Don't Do tweet not. Me.
And I have one dream. I want to stand in Wrigley Field, and I want to lead the seventh inning stretch.
Okay. Speak it into existence.
Yeah.
Kim,
you're a baseball fan, too. I know.
I mean, I'm a baseball fan. I'm kind of like my mom in that, you know, I want everybody to win and have a good time.
That's not how baseball works.
I know. But I think the real winners of this season are going to be the people like me who, you know, are not going to every single game and not following every single play and every single trade.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't call myself a fair weather fan, but I, like you, Sasha, am one of the people who is excited that the game is going to get faster.
Exactly. Speaking of weather, John, I hear you are our resident meteorologist today. Chicago's going to see heavier showers starting later this afternoon, part of a severe weather outbreak over the Midwest. What should we be on the lookout for?
Rain and wind.
Rain, lots of rain.
Thunderstorms.
Tornadoes. And lightning and all of that.
All that patio furniture you put out on a warm weekend, bring it back inside.
Charge your devices.
Hail.
Yeah, well, this is how you know it's spring in Chicago, right?
That's right.
Oh, man.
Like, it's not snowing, but we've got everything else.
And I hate to end it on this note, but we got to leave it there. John Fountain, journalism professor at Roosevelt University, Heather Sharone, Chicago politics reporter for WTTW, and Kim Bellware, national and breaking news reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you all. Have a great weekend. Stay safe.
Thanks, Sasha.
Stay dry. Stay warm.
Thank you.
This episode of Reset was produced by Linnea Dominic, Micah Yasin, and Brenda Ruiz. And it was edited by Stephanie Kim. That's all for Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.